Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Williams, and joining me today is Jeff Clossy.
Hey, Jay. Good morning, man.
Actually, it's probably the other way around. I'm joining you.
Yeah, you are joining me. Where are you right now?
I'm in a room. I'm out in Colorado right now. So we're trying this out. I don't know how completely this is going to sound. So if it does sound a little different and you're going, oh, something's wrong with the audio, do not adjust your radio or your iPod.
This might really bother the audiophiles today. So we just want to give you a warning. We're aware.
Yeah,
and it's going to be what it'll be.
It's going to be what it's going to be. I just, though, reference radio and iPod.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Because I'm 94 years old, evidently. Do you remember? Did you have an iPod? How quickly did you get an iPod?
Of course I had an iPod. Yes, I did.
Right away.
Well, I was in my IT career. So that was like, of course, I need that for programming all day long. It was John Piper sermons and whatever as I'm coding.
Of course, it was John Piper sermons. Yeah. I do remember that, downloading those and putting.
They were early adopters, the Desiring God folk. So they had all of it accessible, and then Tim Keller did as well. Like their ministry did, which was neat. But yeah, I had an iPod. It was amazing. I wish I still had one. To be honest, it'd be nice to be able to listen to music that way and not have it dinging all the time with notifications, right?
Right. And it would also be worth quite a bit of money, I think.
I think they are, for that reason.
And I've seen a resurgence of people using them, but man, that makes me think of the knockoffs too. I forget the knockoffs of it that were really popular.
There were a lot of them. Well, it's important. We are on a podcast talking about iPods, and that's why they're called podcasts. I remember listening to a podcast. This is like in the, early 2000s, where they were discussing, what do we call this thing that we're doing right now? And why podcast makes sense. It's just so funny. Most people don't probably know that.
No, that's true. Like most of the youngins for sure just think podcast is just a term. They just know what it means automatically. Like when the first radio was invented and it was called a radio, and people are like, oh, cause of radio waves and whatever. And it's like, now it's a radio. And, that's pretty funny. I do really like the fact that we're spending the first few minutes alienating 80% of our listeners. I don't know what percentage of our listeners had an iPod, like the original iPod, and they're going, oh, I remember that. It's a small segment.
Probably, yes.
I mean, at least a small gap. So so we'll move on quickly from that. But yes, I'm in Colorado. We're doing this distance through the joys of technology. So I'm sure everything will go exactly the way that we planned for it. So I do miss everybody, but you did a fantastic job.
Thank you, Jay. By God's grace, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the neat thing about this is I would have wanted you doing the community message anyway. So it worked out that's how this kind of landed. But these next 2 weeks, the community and the classroom would have been the two that I would have wanted you doing anyway. So works out nicely, huh?
Yeah, I was excited to get to teach on that. I think especially it's funny when you think about community. I know for you too, when we've been in ministry for so long, right? I was just realizing I've been almost 20 years now in vocational ministry. So the experiences I've had in community have really varied because I've moved a fair number of times. With campus ministry, that was more regular moving. But I had all these examples, of like different experiences in community. But right now, I feel like it's one of the most profound ones I've ever had with the Marinette crew. And so it was really fresh for me why it's so important, because we're experiencing it in real time and why it's worth it. And I just feel it really tangibly personally.
Yeah. I love that you use that example because I'm with you. I know you have lots of examples over the years working, especially in campus ministry and with a church plant before, really deep experiences of community, but the recent ones are really powerful, and to know, hey, this actually works now here.
Yes.
This can have a huge impact right now on your life. And So yeah, let's jump into some of this. I did want to address you got a, we got a couple of questions that were more about logistics.
Yes.
So I kind of want to just get those out of the way so then we can talk about the meat of everything. But I understand you did a good job of giving the disclaimer. So I think it's good to say again here that if you don't, this should not cause any stress at all right now. Like, at least wait for a follow-up question to feel, if you don't feel any stress. But there are exceptions. What I want to keep pounding home to people is this idea that for most of the congregation, they can make the Sunday morning, Wednesday evening rhythm work. And the logic is, if we can make what works for most people, if we can dial that in, that gives us the freedom to be able to make exceptions where we need to make exceptions. As opposed to if we were trying to maintain, say, hey, you know, it could be any night. And so now we're trying to figure out Friday nights and Tuesday nights. And so when an elder tries to go and visit groups, for example, because elders are going to have responsibility over these greenhouses. Well, if I'm responsible for a Monday night and a Tuesday night and a Thursday night and a Friday night and a Saturday morning group, like, that makes that very challenging. But if most of them are on Wednesday night and then we have, you know, a few on Sunday afternoon, for example, that's much more manageable. So there's a method to that. There's a reason for that. But I know one of the questions was, what about my existing group?
Yeah. Yeah. And the question about timing for that.
Yeah. And here's the short version of it. We're not making anybody, if you're already in a community that's doing this and is embracing like the idea of greenhouse in that, that's great. If you're already in a rhythm that meets on Sunday afternoon, we have communities that meet on Sunday afternoon. We have them meet on Thursday night. Now, if you meet on Thursday night, you might want to consider going, you know, moving over to Wednesday. Like, that should be something to consider just to get in those regular rhythms. I think in the long run, that's helpful. But I also think that another common time is going to be Sunday afternoon or Sunday early evening, because of issues about like driving at night, sometimes issues of people driving from a long ways away and they're already here. And so they're in a rhythm of having a meal afterwards after church together. And that works. That's great. The aim of the Sunday morning, Wednesday night thing is not to force people into rhythms that are not possible for them. It's the idea of trying to simplify the overall structure of it so that we can care for everyone better.
Exactly. And I think as we continue to talk about the details of it, some of that will make even more sense. You know, why all of us having a certain night in general, like, again, there's exceptions, could be helpful and useful even beyond a greenhouse. And, you know, one question related, Jay, that just popped in my head that did come up too. You made me think of it with the driving comment you made. One person who was interested in hosting asked the question, hey, I live out in Crivitz. Is that too far away from the building, from Faith Church, for us to do that? And you and I would both be really excited about that question, right? Because that's actually part of the beauty of greenhouses, is we want them to be expressions, like neighborhood expressions, where you gather in a home that is close to you. And we realize that many people at our church, they drive significant distance to get here for worship on a Sunday morning. And the beautiful thing could be, if God provides this, right, in your neighborhood or in your town, a place for you to gather midweek where you're not driving all the way to Peshtigo. So my answer to that shortly is, no, that's not too far. In fact, that's what we want to see. We want to see these in all the different communities that God has us planted in.
Yes, for sure. I would say anywhere that someone is located. And people a lot of times get nervous about the whole geographical thing. You didn't mention this, but since we're talking about it right now, I would say it's just better to be closer geographically to the people that you do community with. It is very difficult to do community when you have to drive 45 minutes to interact with them. Forget about Sunday morning or even a one night a week. Some people will be like, well, it's not that bad, it's one night a week. But the other spontaneous connections, you know, kids at school or going to a baseball game or just meeting up at the park on a beautiful Saturday afternoon or things like that, or needing helping one another with like with watching kids or any of those things, geography matters. You know, like it's to be physically near people. So that does mean because we have people who drive from a long ways away, we need people who are willing to host in all those different areas. Now, again, much like the day thing, it doesn't mean you have to, like, we're not checking IDs. We're not saying like, no, you can only be in this zip code.
We have a zip code sort.
Right.
Nope.
We're not saying that. We're going to do the best we can to give counsel on when is the best and where and all those different things. But if people are in community and they figured it out for whatever reason, you know, maybe you live in, you live in Okano, but you work in Marinette, you know, or something like that. There are reasons why somebody, it's just, we'll figure that out as we go. But I think, again, the big point that needs to be clear is we'll figure those things out. The intention is not to try to force people into something, like I said, to force people into something that doesn't work. We have a lot of people who work second shift and they can't, they don't want to work. I don't know anybody who wants to work second shift. That's usually the one. There are some people who really like working overnight, and there are some people, you know, a lot of people like working the typical like first shift kind of deal, but second shift, every time I talk to somebody, second shift's like the worst. So the chances are if you're working second shift, it's not because you want to, and we get that. And so we'll figure something out. But again, those are the exceptions. And so, yeah, let's talk about the meat, the whole idea of community. So I thought it was interesting that you led off with Nazi Germany. So that was fun.
Well, actually, I led off with Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who happened to be situated in Nazi Germany. Thank you for remembering that part.
Well, I did. I took notes. I was like,
Dietrich is just so you know why I picked him, by the way. I do think because he did community and wanted to practice community in a time that was so difficult to do it. And because he did this all in faith and then really thought hard about it. I mean, to be honest, he did some things that I don't think many people have done. Like before they formed their community, he traveled the world and studied Christian communities all over the world in different streams of Christianity. And he's just a unique guy. So for me, he's meant a lot. And so I thought, hey, let's just throw him in there as an example. And then as someone who I think, you know, if I were to recommend a book, his book, Life Together, is a fantastic book on community. So just a trustworthy, reliable classic on community.
Yeah, I agree. And I would say too that one of the things that struck me when I was listening to it was if it was important there, you know, it was a non-negotiable. Think about how hard it was for them to get together. And you were painting that picture and compare that. You can compare it to Acts 2 and how important it was for them to get together, and then contrast that, I guess, with how often we are so, it's so easy for us to get together actually compared to most times in history. And we then take it for granted the most. And I think that's understandable. You know, a person who, I mean, you know, well, you don't know this as well as I do yet, but as you get older, you know, when I was younger, I didn't want to go for a run. But when you start getting to a place where you can't, you know, your joints don't work, you know, nothing works the way that it used to, you start to miss it. You know, and you think, man, I wish I was of the age I could just go for a quick, you know, just for a run, just run out the door and run and not pay any price for that. And I think the same thing happens with most spiritual disciplines, and including being in community, that we kind of take it for granted because it isn't a hard thing to do, but it feels big and it feels hard. And then we're able to do it. So then we take it for granted and we don't do it, or we don't value it as much as cultures and communities where it's not so easy.
Yeah. I think it just feels different. It sometimes doesn't feel as, I was going to use the word urgent, but that's probably not the right category, but it just doesn't feel as high priority to us. in our day-to-day experience as it would, I think, if we were like literally illegal, you know, like if the government were watching us, and it does raise the bar. It does make me think, I didn't include this in the sermon because there's just only so much you can include, right? But it does make me, in my own life, asking myself the question, what do I actually want, is really valuable whenever I think about any of these things, especially community. Like, do I have a heart's desire for that or not? And that's not where that conversation ends at all. But I do think it's important to tune into that. Like, what does your heart want? Do you want to be in this sort of community?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the big question. So you mentioned like how normal isolation feels to us. And yes. I thought that was really good. And I can't stress this enough. Yeah, if you don't want community, then you will find a million reasons to not have it. And you'll find a lot of reasons that'll even sound spiritual or sound, like, oh, I'm doing these other things, or they'll sound understandable, like, oh, we're really busy. I think just confronting that is such an important thing. I don't know about you, but my first favorite response from a message like this is from somebody who says, I really want that. I want to host, or I want to participate. I can't host, but I'm all in. That's, of course, the most exciting response. I would say the second best response is somebody that comes up and says, if I'm being honest, I don't really want this, but I want to at least, I'm going to explore this and see and pray about this and try, I don't know, do something about that. I think people who are honest about the fact, if you don't want to do it and you're honest about that, you are already far ahead of the person who pretends they want it, or they want it in theory. So you talked about things like an ideal community or at an ideal time, that we fooled ourselves into thinking, well, if it met at the right time and it was with the right people, then I would love to do that. That person is honestly fooling themselves. The person who says, I don't want it, they are in a better position, because now if they bring that to the Lord in prayer, they give the opportunity for the Spirit to change their desires because they're already being honest about it. But so many people are just not honest about it. And I get it, because you're not supposed to say, I don't want community.
Yeah, the right answer is I want community, especially when one of your pastors talks about it the way I was talking about it on Sunday, right? But you're right. Yeah. I just want to agree, make sure that that's known. I agree with you. Like, that honest response is such a refreshing thing. And the reason I just brought it up again, I just feel like that is so crucial, that we are in tune with what we actually desire. And then we start from there. If we want that desire to change, that's the place we start.
Yeah. Do you think, and you also mentioned, then you talked about how you cannot be a disciple without community. And I do want to, touch on that, because that's a strong statement, but I don't want to gloss over the whole normal thing. You may feel fine. And one of the things I was thinking when you were saying that, and I love that line, I forget exactly how you said it, but you may say, like, I'm fine. And you may be fine the way that you feel. And right now, the only illustrations that come into my mind are ones about me being out of shape. And so it's like, I was noticing that of the other day. So I'm coaching soccer, and I had to jump in and scrimmage with them. And I felt fine while I was standing there on the sidelines, barking orders and doing whatever. I got out there, put a penny on, and a little jersey, and started running around. I did not feel fine anymore. And I think that's an illustration of what happens with community a lot with people. They feel fine. I'm fine. I'm growing. I love worship on Sunday morning. But then when something hits, when some stress in your life hits, that's when the loneliness really hits. And you and I both in ministry, sadly, have seen so many times where people have struggled with loneliness in those moments, because when they weren't practicing community when there weren't those stressors, right? And That's just so, it's really critical that, yes, you may feel fine, but it was kind of this two-headed thing you were saying. One is, but you don't know what you're missing. So to me, that's the, yeah, I feel fine eating junk food all the time, because your body orients around that. Your body starts to make that normal. And then all of a sudden you eat some vegetables and guess what's going to happen? It's not going to feel good the first time you eat vegetables. If you've been your whole life, you've been eating just meat and potatoes or meat and bread, and then all of a sudden you like have a huge salad, it's going to wreak havoc on your system. But over time, that is the better thing. And once you, and when people do that, they're like, man, I feel so much better. They didn't know how much better they could feel. So there's that side of community that I just want to make sure I articulate, that if you have not been in community, jumping into it is going to feel uncomfortable, but it is worth it. And the other side of it is, when storms hit, that's not the time to build community. That's like trying to build a boat in the middle of a hurricane.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. You build a boat in a controlled environment so that, you know, you can, I was watching a YouTube video about like this guy that still hand builds boats, these huge boats, like out of wood, and which is insane. And I just thought, yeah, he's building it in this giant outbuilding. He's not building it out there in a hurricane or in a big storm. And that's what so often happens with people with community. You don't realize how much you need it until you really need it. And when you really need it, it doesn't just appear.
Yeah. And I think what is normal to us is what's normal to us. And there's all kinds of illustrations of that. But the other one that pops into my head, Jay, is like, if you've ever been in a state where you're just continually sleep deprived for whatever reason in your life, like you have young children or it's a busy time at work and you're not getting sleep, but that becomes the way you normally feel. And then suddenly you get like an 8-hour night of sleep and you just can't even believe how you feel. But you didn't even realize that you've just gotten used to functioning without nearly enough sleep for a long time. And I do think with community and even some of the other things that we're talking about, like for some people, it might be corporate worship that they're used to not being present, you know, and really consistently with their church family. And it does become normal for you. And that's actually a challenge that we all face, right? And the way out of that, I think partly if you're hearing that and you wonder, is to trust us that our intention is for good and for love. Like we're not at all, we have no other agenda. We want people to experience Jesus and know him. And that's it. It's not about being controlling or about a guilt trip or anything. So trust us that that's why. But then also take some steps out, you know, in patience. The illustration with the salad's good too, Jay, because the first couple, like say you'd say you trust us and you say, all right, I'll do it. I'll try the greenhouse thing. And then the first, you know, month or two just feel like eating the salad for the first time. And that's possible, right? That's possible. It takes some patience for the new thing that is going to be really good for you to really experience that.
Yeah, that's critical. I've multiple times, and for myself too, have tried things once and it's like, oh yeah, that didn't work. And that's not when you get the benefit. Like the benefit is down the road. And it does take time to retrain your palate and to slow down and to listen to people. I think that your point though, of like, you cannot be a disciple without community. I really appreciated the way you phrased that and that you doubled down on it. I think that's one of the critical moments that people understand. Like in love, we have to tell people this, it's not optional. And we're talking about these four environments. They aren't negotiable. They are ones that we see throughout scripture as the way people are formed. And if you are not participating in one of these, you are not going to form. It's a little bit, you know, this is not fitness, but it is physical health. You know, you talk about exercise, diet, and rest. Those are three important things. And if you aren't, you can eat as well as you want to, and you can exercise. But if you're not getting sleep, like you said, when you're sleep deprived, it destroys everything. Or if you, any of the two of the three, you're going to be out of whack. And the same thing is with this. Like, if you're just coming to worship, but there's no outlet of community, there's no practicing in community, you won't be able to be formed as a true disciple. It's not possible. Now, then people who want to be contrarian will say, like, well, what about the person who's in, you know, the missionary that goes to an area where there's no Christians and they're the only one? God miraculously sustains people, again, through exceptions. It's kind of like what we were talking about with the Wednesday night, Sunday morning rhythm. Like, there's normative and then there are exceptions. And God always, but even when Elijah is complaining, like, I'm the only one. And God's like, no, you're not. You're not actually alone. There's a remnant. I'm in control of that. So any exception that there is, it's typically not the ones we come up with. They're pretty, you know, pretty miraculous ones that God miraculously sustains people for. But it's not negotiable. And I love what you said. I wrote it down. You said, it's not something we fit in. It's something we build around.
Yes.
And that right there, I was like, man, I hope people got that. I hope people got that and grasped the weight of that. And we're not going to be, that's one of my hopes as we talk about these things, these environments, is that we unapologetically, gently and unapologetically say, this is critical. Just as much as you would tell somebody, hey, you need to have exercise, rest, and you need to eat well. If a doctor said, like, oh, I don't want to offend them by saying they should sleep well, or I want to be open-minded. So maybe, you know, some people sleep and some people don't, you know, like, well, that's not exactly true. There are people who need more sleep than others. And there are people who need more relational connection than others. But everybody needs sleep and everybody needs community. And it's not an optional thing. And if you're trying to fit it in to your life, it won't ever happen. But if you build around it, like a lot of people do on Sunday morning, right? Like a lot of us build around Sunday morning. We just know what we need to be at worship together. And most people in our church, if someone said, hey, do you want to grab breakfast on Sunday? You know, we can meet on Saturday or Sunday morning. They're not going to respond with, well, yeah, either's fine. They're going to say, well, I can't on Sunday morning because I'm at church. So we'll do Saturday morning, or let's grab lunch on Sunday. So we want to view community the same way.
Yeah, that's a great example. I love that, like, the building. And I think more than ever, I mean, it's not like building around has changed that much in the last decade or two, but I do feel like maybe it's just the options for the ways that we can spend our lives or how full they can get with activities, sports, or you name it, right? Clubs. Because of all the options in our life, and because I think we're so interconnected virtually, it just feels to me like more than ever, we have to make that decision. I will build around this thing rather than think I'm going to fit it in, because something will take its spot. And that's always been the case with humans, right? But I think more than ever, we just have complexities that are unique to our current age.
Yeah. Do you know the illustration? It's an old illustration that I still use in my life a lot, where a person takes a jar and they have sand and they have rocks. And all of this can fit into this jar. And if you put the sand in first and then try to put the rocks, if you imagine the sand, like, creates this base, and then you try to put the rocks in, it doesn't fit. But when you put the rocks in first, and it doesn't fit because there's all that wasted space in the rocks. But when you put the rocks in first, they all fit in the jar. Now the sand can fill in all the other spaces. And it's such a great illustration to show you have rocks in your life. And those are the first things you put on your calendar. It's not always the sand is also stuff that needs to fit in your life. Those are things that have to be done, but they can fit around the rocks. And so rocks would be things like worship and community, time with my family. You know, those are rocks. And then the other stuff in our life is sand, but that's the big deal. And a lot of people treat community as sand, as a thing that if I have time, I'll try to fit it in somewhere. I'll try to find a crevice to put it in. But it's not, it's a rock in our, it should be a rock in our lives. And it's critical. Why, let me ask you this. Why is that? So, I mean, you did touch on this a little bit, but what are the things that can only be formed? Like you can restate some of them that you said, or if there are others that you left out, because I mean, you couldn't say all the things that are formed in community, but what are the things that we say, you can't do this outside of the environment of community. And by the way, we should point out that doesn't mean small group. We're not talking about the program, even of Greenhouse. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about real community. When we did house churches, that was the community. Like our house churches didn't also then have greenhouses or small groups. If you've ever been a part of a church of like 50 people, they don't need small groups because they can do the community there. They often, you know, a church that size often does like a communal prayer time in the worship service. They, you know, they might share a meal together afterwards. So I want to make sure that that's clear. We're not talking about that the program of Greenhouse, gospel community, small groups, life groups, any of those things, that's the non-negotiable. It's not. It's the community environment, the environment of community. And in our Sunday morning, because of how we function in our culture and because of the size of our church, does not meet that environment. It's not possible in that environment. So what is being formed in that environment of community, and especially thinking about those things that can't really happen than on Sunday morning in our particular context.
Yeah, maybe I'll start by answering it with something that someone said to me this week that was ended up being a huge encouragement. So we were gathered with our Marinette crew, the church plant crew, and we were sitting on a stage of a set of a play together, okay, because we were going to work on this, taking this set down. And this person looked at me and they said, they were thinking about the last year of us connecting as a community. Like I said, it's been about a year since we started really spending time together as a community. And she said to me, I am so glad we didn't get this church building that we had looked at a building to rent months ago and it didn't work out. And she was saying, I'm so glad we didn't get that building because if we had, all we would do together is sit in pews. And I thought, that is so profound, because what she was highlighting was that community is much more than sitting together in a pew. And that's part of my answer, I guess, to that question is the things that you learn to do and that God works in you are things, I mean, this is an easy answer, but it's like how to love one another. And now we're going to be talking about the classroom on Sunday, and we can learn about love. We can define it in a classroom, right? We can unpack ways that are not loving in a classroom, like even an ethics class, right? But to actually practice love requires more than one person, right? It requires an interaction with people in your life to learn how to do that well. And I would say all of those one another's, so there's over 50 of them, right? There's a lot of them in the New Testament. Being kind, being humble with one another, forgiving one another, that's a huge one that I think most of us would probably prefer to avoid having to learn that, because that means that there's been some wrong done. But that is so crucial to learn how to do that. Because again, all of these are ways that God has already interacted with us. He's already forgiven us. So we get to learn what it's like to be him that in that way, right? To share that joy of forgiving the way he experiences that joy of forgiving. So I guess that's my main answer, Jay, why it's so unique. And you know, so many of the things that end up, at least for me, that have formed me through community that God has used, they haven't been planned. They haven't been scripted, right? They are spontaneous, at least to me. They're not to God, right? He knows what he's doing. But to me, they feel spontaneous. They feel like, oh, wow. Like for another example, this goes to the point of why it can be really helpful to be in close physical proximity with the people you're in community, where you live. So I was just driving to the middle school to drop off our son, and someone who I'm in community with was driving the other direction that morning. And so we got to see each other through the car window, and wave. And then when I arrived at church, I had a text that said, "Hey, so good to see you this morning, even if only briefly. Here's what I'm praying for you. Could you pray this for me?" That is amazing. That is God's grace to me. So like, that's the other thing I think you experience in community. It's actually tangible, humanized, physical God's presence, right? That was just God's love to me in that moment. That's all that was. But it came through a person I was in community with. So I guess that's a couple answers. What would you add, Jay, about, again, the things that are formed uniquely there?
Well, I think, man, I don't want to gloss past that example. What a beautiful example. So imagine you drove past somebody that you only see on Sunday mornings. You might have waved, but that would be the extent. There's the difference between waving at somebody and recognizing someone. And we see that all the time. People run into people from our church out in the community and they wait, oh, hey, you know, they may even know their name, might ask about their family, you know, something like that. It's very different than when you're in community with someone and saying that seeing that person now stirs in my mind what you shared last week about what was going on in your life, how you could be prayed for, and then taking that opportunity to say, "Hey, I'm praying for these things. How are these things going? And also, can you pray for me?" I mean, that's a level of relationship that is not assumed on a Sunday morning, right? Like when you come to Sunday morning, you aren't assuming that, okay, everyone's main thought here is how they can be praying for me. There's a little bit of the define the relationship kind of thing, but in community, you're in that relationship. You know, like I don't have the define the relationship talk with Lauren anymore. Like we had that, and we made those decisions. And that's what the function of, you know, or that's the function that the form of small group is taking, like that greenhouse of saying, okay, but when you're part of this, this is the understanding. We're looking at one another and saying we're taking responsibility for each other. You can't do that for everybody on a Sunday morning. So I think being known at that level, being noticed at that level, you know as well as I do that one of the great challenges of ministry, and I want to be careful how I say this because I want to communicate it with the heart that it's intended. When somebody isn't at worship for a while and then they feel like, okay, nobody reached out to me, that to me is a symptom of a lack of community. They don't always realize, like, it's not possible. You and I do not notice. It's hard enough to get, we can't even get around and talk to the people who are there. We are not physically capable. Our brains are not capable of keeping, you know, nearly 1,000 people at the front of mind all the time and noticing everything. It's just not possible. But whenever I hear that, I feel sad though. Like I don't feel dismissive of that. What they're articulating is a very real human need to be seen, to be noticed, to be missed. But we all know that's what those deeper relationships are for. You're missed because there's an investment there. And you're in that's where in those community environments, that's where you're known. If you're in a greenhouse, for example, and you don't show up for several weeks, they're going to notice. They're probably going to notice that day. And they're probably going to, they may even notice like during the meeting and say, "Hey, where are you? Like, are you coming tonight?" That's a really important thing for all of us. This is where I can insert the last meeting that we had that I spaced and I wasn't there for an hour and you did not text at all. Didn't even care where I was. Didn't even notice. You noticed I wasn't there, but I think you must have been thankful for it. I don't know, but
of course you had to say that.
That's going
to
be a sermon illustration. Oh, that's going to be a sermon illustration at some point. There's a teaser for that. Cause that is a, to me, a funny story, but that's what I, when, you and I both, I think this is what's critical about it, is you and I both feel the weight when that people, here's the reality. When we don't have community, then what you end up doing in a church is you put that weight on staff, you know, on the pastors and all of the communal weight. Now there is a weight on pastors, and we do, like, there's counseling and shepherding and things that we do that are really important. That is an extra, you know, it's this level of responsibility that we have. And that is true. But, you know, imagine if your son, like, let's say Liam said, like, started saying to me, "Hey, can you play catch with me? Can you take me on my college visits? Can you, could you feed me dinner?" And at some point I'm going to go, "Hey, sure, man. Like, I'm happy to do that. But you have a mom and dad. Like, why, where, is your dad going to take you on a college visit?" It would be really strange for you to just say, "Well, you know, if Liam needs some relational connection, that's what the pastor's for." Well, we would all go, "Well, no, you have your dad." And the same thing happens in community. Those kind of normal, everyday relational connections to pray for one another, to encourage one another, to be seen, to be noticed, to have somebody notice when something's off with us, that's meant to be among the flock. It's not meant to all be on the pastor. It's not possible. And so that's one of the things I would say is that you're missing is you just can't be known in the way that we're called to be known and have the intimacy that we're called to have if you're not in a regular community that you're taking responsibility. Like, for a group of people who are all on the same page that they're taking responsibility for one another. Like, nobody's surprised. Liam was not surprised when you took him on college visits. He wasn't surprised that you took him.
No.
It wasn't to him like a 50-50 of like, "Well, is my dad going to take me? Is Jay going to take me?" Like, it was either me, you, or Jess. That's, yep. And that's the right way of, does that make sense? Like, how I'm trying to flesh that idea out?
It does. And I like how you started that whole thing too, by saying, I want to communicate this, you know, compassionately, sensitively, because we get that sense and we want to know, right? We want to know as many people as we are able to at the level that we can. But I think what you're pointing out is the environment of corporate worship makes that, it's very limited to what that will look like. And because we are just one human being, the quantity of people is more than one human being can do that with well. And I think the other thing I would add to that is the other side of it. So, like, in a community, a smaller community, like a greenhouse gospel community, you not only do people notice when something is off with you, like maybe you didn't show up and they thought you would, but you notice other people as well. And then you take ownership to be the person. And I know this, like, even happened in our community recently in Marinette, where someone wasn't there yet and we were getting ready to start our meal together and it was odd and no one knew that they weren't coming. So of course, one of us got on the phone and found out, actually, no, they need prayer because this thing happened. They're on their way to the urgent care. And we knew that, and it wasn't weird for us. They didn't feel like we were being invasive either. That was, again, part of the DTR, is you realize I take ownership. I care about you, and I will notice when you're not there. And that same person would have done that for any one of us. So there's a mutuality. Maybe that's what I'm trying to say. There's a mutuality that happens in community that way that is so important for us to receive and for us to give, because we're actually transformed by both parts of that, both sides of that coin, the giving of it and the receiving of it.
Right. And that is where you can exercise your gifts too, which is something that in corporate worship, you can to an extent, for sure, but it depends on what your gifts are. Not all of the gifts are exercised by everyone on Sunday morning, but in a small group environment, like in our greenhouses, your giftings, the spiritual gifts that God has given you to build up the body, that's when they can really be on display. And that's when you can really encourage somebody. That's where you can build people up. That's where you stir one another to love and good works. Can that happen on Sunday mornings? Sure. But The reality is that it doesn't happen in the intense way. It doesn't happen in the sense of responsibility way. I would say it's almost like more of a bonus. Like, let's say that you have a gift of encouragement. You're just really good at building people up, encouraging them, hearing them tell you about a tough, like they're in a tough season, and you're good at giving them courage, giving them strength, making them feel like, okay, in the Lord, I can walk this road. Well, how often can you do that on a Sunday morning? And it's going to feel like a bonus, right? Like you might go and do that for a couple of people. Awesome. Well, in a small group environment, in an environment formed around community, you have a responsibility for that. Like it's now you're going into that and saying, okay, how do I, here are these 8 people or these 10 people or these 6 people. How do I encourage them? I need to use my gift for this. You don't do that on a Sunday morning. Like nobody, if you have a gift of encouragement, you're not going in there and go, okay, my responsibility is to go around and encourage every one of the people that's here. That would be impossible. It's so similar. I keep comparing it to a family because I think that captures it well, that I have a responsibility to exhort and encourage. Well, even if you think about it from a church level, our church family, that's my responsibility. That doesn't mean I don't encourage, exhort anything like other Christians in our community, for sure. Christians out here, as I'm interacting with Christians in Colorado, I can do that. And I do, but that's kind of like, I don't want to say like it's bonus, you know, it's like, but it's different than the responsibility I have for our church family. If that makes sense. Like some of it is a responsibility thing.
Yeah, it is. And that's that mutual ownership, the mutual responsibility for each other, right? That, I mean, it is the family, and that's the New Testament words, right? Our brother and sister, household of faith.
Right.
That's why. So
that's why you break it down as part of organization. Why did God give us the nuclear family? It's not because we're going to be that in heaven. It's to demonstrate so that we have a picture of what his love is for us. It's also organizational, right? Imagine if we see what happens in our culture with the breakdown of the family, what ends up happening. And in cultures where family units break down, there's a lack of responsibility and lack of care. So family it's a lot of things, but one of them is it's organizational. And that's part of what a small group ministry is in the church, is saying, okay, we need to be organized here so that people aren't slipping through the cracks, and so that you're able to exercise your gifts, because that's part of what we're supposed to be doing, is equipping you for the work of the ministry. And so God has given you certain gifts that you need to exercise. And that's part of the non-negotiable side of it. It's the parable of the talents. God has given you something. He expects you to use it. And we have a lot of people, frankly, that are very gifted in different ways, but they're content to not use those gifts in the church, or they only use it kind of sporadically. And what I would want to say to somebody is, if God has given you these gifts, there's an expectation. He expects you to be using them to build up the body. And this is the context, you know. And by the way, when I talk about gifts, I'm talking about spiritual gifts. I'm not talking about like, you know, I'm a really good guitar player, or, you know, I'm a, like, whatever the case is, I'm really good at IT systems, or I'm a really good welder. Like, so like, where can I weld? I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, you know, discernment, encouragement, you know, these different things that we are called to that build up the body.
Yeah, that's a good word. You know, Jay, there's another question that I don't know if that now's a good time to transition to that. They got sent in.
Probably because, yeah, we're pushing it here. We've been cooking for a while.
Yeah. Well, that's because we didn't get to talk all week, right? So now we got all these words we haven't used.
I know.
So one of the questions that got sent in to me that I think is a really good one that I think a lot of people probably have is related to the challenge of community and feeling, you know, I guess I would summarize it by saying, if we're in a greenhouse together and we're plants in this greenhouse, this feeling that like maybe I'm the kind of plant in that greenhouse that will that will be maybe harmful to the other plants or won't fit in with the other plants, or, you know, and I think some of that's related to, you know, I made the comment that a couple of the costs of being in community, besides just the time to do it, are going to be the cost of being vulnerable, right? And the cost of being authentic. So I think that's probably partly where some of that question comes from. And I guess the first thing I would say, and I would love to hear your answer to some of that too, but is just that when we talk about being vulnerable, we don't mean like every single thing that happens in your life has to be on display for everyone in that community to hear. That actually isn't what we mean. We wouldn't want that all the time. So it doesn't mean this constant flow of everything that's inside of yourself, like just complete transparency. That's not what we mean. But we do mean sharing of things with that community in ways that are appropriate to those relationships that you wouldn't share with the random person at Walmart, right? So like a side of you that is like you're choosing to give that part of yourself to that group. It's a gift that you offer when you're vulnerable. And so it might be that you're having a hard week at work. That's the group of people that you would say, I'm having a hard week at work. Here's how I could use prayer. Now, if you go overboard with that, then we become a support group. And I talked about that too, where the whole time is now dominated by that problem. But there's some sort of healthy way, I was going to say balance, but it's not even balance. It's just like a healthy way of giving that to the group and the group then responding in prayer. And the same with authenticity. Those are very similar ideas, right? It's just you being the real you with the group, not the you that you imagine that would fit better with the group and with a different kind of personality than you really have, right? If you're a quieter person, you'll be quieter with the group, right? If you're more talk, you'll be talkative. And in each kind of personality will then, in love, do the thing that can be uncomfortable. So the quieter person is going to talk because they want to give that gift to that group, right? And the talkative person will make sure that they have a bit of a governor on their mouth so that other people in the group can also be heard as well. So they give the gift of silence in those moments. So, but what else would you say, Jay, you know, with the concern about like, hey, if I enter into a community, what do I do to it if I feel like I'm just not worthy of it?
Yeah, well, so one, I think it's interesting because I just spent all that time talking about how you have these gifts that you need to use to build up the body. And then that is counterbalanced. So what you said is it's not about you. So you don't go into the small group and be like, well, I have the gift of teaching. And so I'm going to teach. That's not what those are for. That's not the environment for that. If you do have the gift of teaching, then the classroom environment may very well be that idea, but you still can use the gift of teaching in a small group environment, in a communal environment, but it's going to look different. It's not going to look like a lecture. It might look like someone says, brings in the group, you know, they're there and they say, you know, hey, I read 1 Corinthians 13 and I'm not sure that I understand, you know, what this connection is. And if you have the gift of teaching, you might be able to help them explain that, you know, in a couple of minutes and help them understand it. That's what that is. So I love how you said that it also, because it also means being willing to lay down like you're laying down your gifts in service of God. So you're basically saying, look, these are yours. You do with them as you please. And so I'm not going to bury them. So like I said, God wants you to use them, but then also sometimes God's going to call you to not use them, to say, no, this isn't about you. I'm going to have somebody else teach them, or I'm going to have somebody else encourage them, which is awesome. So I think that same mentality goes to it's not about you. So if you're sitting there feeling like, well, I'm going to be the one that kind of messes up the group because I feel like I mess up everything in my life or anything like that, man. Well, one, you're already halfway there as far as the transparency and the self-awareness. It's a little bit more, it's a little bit like the person who says, well, I don't want that. You're like, okay, well, you're in a good spot then, because you have a self-awareness that we can use. Like we can leverage that and use that to spur towards growth. But I think what you said about being open and being vulnerable is just being willing to be seen for who you really are. And that's what transparency, it's just being, honest. So if you imagine the situation of, you mentioned work, like I had a hard week at work. Well, if I'm sharing that in a communal environment, I might say, man, this week has been challenging and I could use prayer because I'm feeling discouraged. That's probably how I would share that. And I think that's an appropriate way to share that, which is different than what I would say to the Walmart cashier who says, how are you doing today? I'm probably not going to say that to them. It's a different answer. But to that group, it would be weird though, if I said, this has been a challenging week because Jeff is super annoying and he's driving me crazy all week. And then I met with this person and this person is like, their life is a mess. And like, well, obviously that's super inappropriate. Mm-hmm. Now we're turning into gossip and we have to remember in community, like we are in a small area, right? Like people, I went to a conference yesterday and the last couple of days, and they had a breakout session on disciple making in small towns. And the first is a 3-part thing. And the first one was so funny because it was just there. These are all the realities of living in a smaller community in small towns in rural America that are not present in metro areas. And one of them was the relational intimacy, the interweaving that people know each other. And so there are appropriate levels of that communication. So I think that that would relieve some of those fears. But I think the other thing is, this is the last thing that I really wanted to mention from your message that I want to make sure we hit is plays into this too, which you said imperfections are the things that form us. So the fact that the community is a little messy, the fact that you're going to have people in a community that are socially awkward, they're just not gifted socially, but they probably care really deeply. And so being in a communal environment allows you the space and the time to let those imperfections form you and shape you, which is different than a Sunday morning, right? On a Sunday morning, if you have an awkward interaction with somebody, if you say, hey, you know, like if you came up to me and you said, hi, my name's Jeff, and I just stared at you, you'd probably walk away and go talk to somebody else. Lots of people you can talk to. And then the next time you see me on Sunday, you're probably not coming up and saying hi to me. I mean, it's just a reality. But when you're sitting in a living room across from each other, sharing a meal together, that's different, right? And I think that giving that space, which for the person then who feels like, man, my life is a mess, or I don't connect well with others naturally, then I hope you hear that and say, okay, that's the space where I can, because that's the space where that's the environment where time will be given for people to actually get to know me. Some people make great first impressions and some people don't. And the communal environment is a place where you don't have to make a great first impression. Like people will take the time to get to know you. Whereas in larger environments, that's just not always the case.
Yeah, I really like that point. Because there's something about the patience that goes with it, that you expect it's going to take time. And yeah, that's a really good point. And that's one of the reasons community is so important, right? Because it's for everyone. It's not just for the people who, you know, are gifted conversationalists. It's not. God intends for all of his children to be in it together. And that's an experience that is a blessing for all of us, no matter if every single personality in that community is one that you're like, yeah, that's the best match for me. You know, we see eye to eye on everything. That's not the case, and it won't be the case, you know, and that's a beautiful thing. Actually, that's by God's design that it's that way.
When we have everything in common, it's really boring.
It's true.
I mean, it's, and you're right. Like the heat forges that. You and I both have these experiences where hard community has produced the most fruit. And of course we love hanging out with people that we have a lot in common with, and we share the same sense of humor and we kind of share the same views. That's fun. And I'm not saying you shouldn't do that. That's a great thing. But what we are saying is that the opposite of that is not a negative. God uses that too. And that's why, you know, the multi-generational thing is so big. You know, yes, of course it's easier. You know, if you only have older teenagers or you're an empty nester, of course it's easier to just go meet with other empty nesters. But you're missing something. Mm-hmm. You're missing, you know, in the same way with like young adults. We have young adults that get together all the time. And I love that right now. I love that they're doing it. You know, we've used the illustration before of a family reunion, that in a big family reunion, there's times where the whole family is getting together. There's times where there's at meals where you're sitting across from grandma and, you know, your great aunt and, you know, and your baby cousin or whatever. And then there's times that the teenagers are like, hey, we're going to go hang out outside, or the 20 somethings are like, we're going to go out tonight. We're going to go out to dinner or whatever. That's great. But if you're only ever around people who are in the same life stage and have the same sense of humor and have the same hobbies, then that's what you're going to end up talking about. By the way, you're going to be talking about, I mean, we've said this before, that we talk about the first thing that we have in common. And, you know, most people, if you work together, guess what you're going to talk about 90% of the time. If you both love the Packers, guess what you're going to talk about. If you both love fishing, if you have kids who are the same age, and all those conversations can be good and life-giving and they're beautiful gifts from the Lord, but they're not the only ones we need to have, right? And by the way, think about this. If someone does this, by the way, Sunday morning and Wednesday evening, that's roughly 3 to 4 hours, but let's even call it 4 hours of your week. And what is there, 168 hours in a week? That's a small percentage of your week. So for me, who I used to like really push against structure and organization, like my wiring is not to want to be structured. And I was like, oh, I don't want to overstructure things or whatever. And I remember having that kind of aha moment of, this is 4 hours out of 168. That's a small amount. And so just like we would say, hey, we don't have to gather every day to do corporate worship. But it is really important. It's a really important environment to be formed in. We're saying the same thing about, you know, community. Some people will meet together a lot more because of their life stage, because of their relational wiring. And then other people, these will be kind of their main rhythms. But it's something that's really, it's really critical. Anything else you would add before we?
No, other than I'm excited to do this together. And you know, we said this at the beginning and I said it in the sermon too, but if you have questions, specifically, you know, about anything, obviously, but also community and greenhouses, don't panic. There's nothing to be stressed about. We're going to work through this together when there's, you know, concerns or when there are questions about how does this work for me. That's what we want to do. We want to help you do this. And that's why we're being so deliberate, even about the way we're talking about it, so that we have time as a body to figure it out together. And to me, it's a really exciting thing. And I was pumped after the sermon, how many people were just excited about what God is doing in that and excited to be part of it. So if you're hearing this too, and you've been thinking about wanting to be potentially a host, we'd encourage you to send something in. Like you can send us an email, you can fill out a communication card on Sunday again too. But if God's bringing that to your mind and to your heart, we want to help you to do that.
Yeah. And you did a great job of pointing out that like the difference between host and leader. All we're saying is that you can open up your home. And I love that you said that, you know, it may be seasonal for you, whatever the case is. But if God is putting on your heart to say, you know what, I should at least find out more, that's the next step. And if you're newer to our church, you should know the part of our culture with people volunteering is we make it really easy to say no. So there's no hard sell coming, you know, unless I feel like the Holy Spirit is telling me that I'm supposed to tell you, hey, I think you're supposed to step out in faith in this. But there's no hard sell coming. There's no like, oh, if you go to the informational, if we have an informational meeting and you go to it and you think, oh, I don't think that we should be taking that on. Okay. Like nobody, there's not going to be any, and I think that's, people sometimes get nervous even to say they're interested because then they're afraid they're like on some kind of hit list that they're like, okay, well then we'll make it happen. No, we like to make it very easy. to say no, because we want you to be obedient to what Jesus is calling you to do. And so, yeah, those questions that you might have, if you have any questions, even if it seems silly, if you are worried about how you interact with people, we can help you with that too. If you're concerned about anything relationally with these communities or any logistics or anything, just talk to us, and we'll like you said, we'll figure it out together. I'm really excited about this too. I'm really excited for next week and you know the coming weeks in this series. And I'm really excited to just get things rolling. That's what I'm excited about. And I know that once that happens, the people who are experiencing it, those stories will be shared, and people will be encouraged. And God is going to do what he always does, which is radically change lives. So we hope that this has been helpful to clarify, to encourage as we think about the environment of community. We appreciate you taking the time to listen. Until next time, grace and peace.